Great. I think Annie really set things up very well with the quotes. And oh, is this? Is that better? So good morning. Yeah, good morning. Today we're talking about deviance and your quotations. Keep those in mind because ideally we'll be talking back and forth a bit. I tend to be a blowhard and I talk a lot. So yeah, most of this will be me, but there'll be back and forth with you guys. So in 2023 alone, a year that is less than 8 months old, state legislatures have introduced over 520 anti-LGBTQ plus bills, a record. Over 220 bills specifically target transgender and non-binary people, also a record. And 70 of those bills have been enacted into law so far this year, including 15 which banned gender-affirming care for transgender youth, seven which require or allow the misgendering of transgender students, and two laws targeting drag performances. And of course, there was a Supreme Court ruling of just a month ago that legalized discrimination for businesses against homosexuals. So it all looks pretty bleak. At this point, in order to have some perspective, I think that it would be good to take a look at the history of deviance, a look at deviance over the very long term gives us room for hope in these dark times. Right away, however, some of you are probably upset that immediately after speaking of LGBTQ plus concerns, I mentioned deviance, as if to say that the members of that community are deviants. For that reason, it's really important that we identify terms from the start. What or who is a deviant? What is deviance? Not a rhetorical question. What do you think? This is sort of the interactive part here. What does it mean to be a deviant? And Rita, I know you have some thoughts on this because you brought up earlier when we were talking about this. Do you remember your question that you asked?
I just had the question, if you're going to ask about deviance, I need to say deviant from what?
And that is a key question, because I do think when we hear the word deviant, in our minds, we have a connotation of something really bad and negative. But that actually is not what a deviant is. According to the dictionary, a deviant is simply someone or something that deviates from a norm. That's it. It's a person who deviates from what is considered normal or acceptable. So, even though that might have taken on a negative connotation, in truth, it's a neutral term, really. But, no, so Diane disagrees with me, but we can talk about that. But, I mean, in its heart, in its dictionary definition, it's neutral. But what this means is, rather than looking at what is deviant, Rita had the right question. We have to look at what is the norm and who determines what is normal. The French philosopher Michel Foucault argued in his 1975 book, Discipline and Punish, that such disparate societal institutions as schools, factories, the medical establishment, prisons, mental asylums, and the entire psychiatric profession share one key feature: they are all designed to create citizens who comply with social norms. But then the question is, where do these social norms come from? According to Foucault, those in power in any society create them. They create the norm. This normalizing ability is an exertion of power by creating and identifying not just the behaviors that are acceptable, read normal, but in creating what is the norm, the accepted, it then becomes apparent to all which behaviors are outside the norm, in a word, deviant. This is a pure expression of power, to have the ability to normalize some behaviors and thereby label others as deviant. The point of normalizing some behaviors is to penalize those who are outside the norms. Normalizing creates deviance. Without the normalization, punished for their actions. Therefore, deviance is a creation of those who are in control, the power structure, those who have the power to normalize. Behaviors all are mere reflections of the power structure in place. We can make two further observations from this fact. First, as societal norms are human creations and not natural, they have a history which we can uncover. And second and most important, that history teaches us that social norms change over time. They're not eternal. What was once considered deviant becomes over time the new normal. And a perfect illustration of this, where is my chart? Yes, is this 12th century schematic of acceptable sexual behavior in Europe according to the Catholic Church, the dominant power structure of medieval Europe. While the chart is written to be ridiculous, the laws shaping sexual conduct within it are true. These laws conform to what the Catholic Church was enforcing in the 12th century. So I ask you, looking over this chart, and I hope you can read it, it's a little blurry, what were the normalized sexual behaviors in the 12th century? Or if it's easier to answer, what is considered deviant sexual behavior in the 12th century from this chart? Julian? Okay. That is a summary. But if you go through it, I mean, there is a lot of specific things, right? You have to be married, but you have to be married more than 3 days. And of course, they're specifying it's kind of heterosexual. The assumption here is they're talking to a man, right? Because they're saying, is this your wife? So you're married to the woman you're having sex with. You've been married for over 3 days. But what really gets me is if you look at all the times you can't have sex, Lent, Advent, Whitsun week, Easter week, a feast day, a fast day, Sunday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, not in the daylight, not naked, not in a church. I don't even know why they had to put that in there. And very importantly, do you want a child? Because going back to what Julian said, you cannot have sex just for enjoyment. It is for procreation alone. So these were the 12th century standards. And before you begin to think that this has nothing to do with you, don't forget, birth control was illegal in the United States for married couples until 1965. The illegality of birth control for married couples is a concrete expression of a clear societal norm that sex is only for procreation, not for pleasure. And of course, the norm was shattered in the Supreme Court case, Griswold versus Connecticut, where for the first time in 1965, it was legal for married couples to buy birth control without government interference. And we know that wasn't the end of the birth control debate, right? We are still arguing over who has access to birth control. Should birth control pills be sold over the counter? We're in 2023, you know, we're arguing that. The argument over birth control is an argument over what kinds of sexual behaviors are acceptable, normal, and what kinds are deviant. We're still having that argument. Clearly, the 12th century attitudes of what is considered to be normal sexual behaviors, as seen in the chart you have, has long legs. The takeaway for us, the positive lesson of what is to be learned here, is that what was considered normal in the 12th century or normal in 1964, the year before Griswold, is no longer in 2023 the norm. 70 years ago, the use of contraceptives, even for married couples, was considered deviant. That's no longer the case. The norm has shifted, and therefore what is considered deviant has shifted as well. The views of the Catholic Church have long been very powerful shapers of what is considered to be normal behavior, often to the detriment of individual rights. Look at Joan of Arc. She was put to death in 1431 by a Catholic court, an Inquisition, for wearing men's clothing. Most people mistakenly believe that she was put on trial for being a witch, and that's just not the case. That is not why she was put to death. Her death sentence came about because she put on male clothing after promising to no longer wear it. And there's a whole long story there, if you doubt me, but I do teach this at school, so I'm just saying, believe me, she was put to death for putting on men's clothing. She was a cross-dresser, even though that's not, you know, something she would have said. And that was deviant behavior. The Catholic Church was very clear on this point. St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the fathers of the church, wrote in the 14th century, it is sinful for a woman to use male clothing. That was an official position of the church. When I was a child in elementary school in the 1960s, I had to wear dresses every day, even on cold, snowy days when recess was almost unbearable, because my father, raised a Catholic, even though he had left the church, those behaviors that he had been raised in stayed with him, and he thought it was wrong for girls to wear pants. I remember arguing with him and telling him, you know, it's hard to be out on recess in a skirt. You know, it was really cold. And he said, no, you know, you just want to wear a costume. No. How many women here are wearing pants? I'm wearing pants, you know, as I stand here. It's not considered cross-dressing anymore. For women to wear what for centuries was considered to be exclusively male apparel. While the reverse has taken longer to be accepted, men wearing women's clothing, it too is slowly becoming more normalized. Think of Harry Styles wearing skirts or, oh, now I can't think of the guy, Daniel Levy, right? Or men wearing pierced earrings. That's, no one even thinks about that. Like at DePauw, guys on the football team have earrings in both ears. It's just not thought about. And now this new trend, I don't know, have you noticed men wearing pearl necklaces? I don't know where that came about, but that's becoming a thing. So the old standards of normal behavior, and therefore of deviant behavior, yet again, have been changed. The norms change over time. That gives us hope. Most compellingly, attitudes towards homosexual have undergone radical changes. Going back to the earliest years of European history, there were three groups of people who were routinely targeted and scapegoated whenever anything bad happened: the Jews, the lepers, and the homosexuals. These three groups were blamed for any and all catastrophes that occurred in a community. Attacks on homosexuality go back to the earliest days of Christianity, and this became a feature of Western life. Don't forget that as recently as 1895, the English writer Oscar Wilde was sentenced to 2 years in prison at hard labor for gross indecency. His crime, the details of his private homosexual affair with a British aristocrat, had been made public. So just the knowledge that somewhere in a room all on his own with this other man, he had sex, not out in public, not on the streets, that was considered gross indecency. And he went to prison. Sodomy laws were on the books across the United States throughout the 20th century. These laws were affirmed by the Supreme Court in 1986 in the case Bowers v. Hardwick, where the court upheld a Georgia anti-sodomy law. In the 5-4 Supreme Court ruling, the court held that the 14th Amendment's promise of due process doesn't prevent states from criminalizing private consensual sex between people of the same sex. 1986. And yet just 10 years later, the Supreme Court changed its position in 1996. In the case Romer versus Evans, the Supreme Court ruled that laws couldn't single out LGBTQ plus people to take away their rights. The case revolved around an amendment to a Colorado law. And what is the deal with Colorado? You know, this recent court case also came out of Colorado. Something's in the water there. Anyway, this 1996 case revolved around an amendment to a Colorado law which banned cities from passing anti-discrimination laws that would protect gay and bisexual people. They wanted to ban that ability. In a 6-3 decision, the court ruled that the law didn't adhere to the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause because of how it singled out a certain group. In Romer, the Supreme Court recognized for the first time that carving LGBTQ plus people out of protections that everybody else could have access to violated equal protection. Excuse me. As most people aren't slavish followers of the Supreme Court, and there is a debate on whether the Supreme Court initiates cultural change or merely reaffirms changes society has already made, no talk on normalizing institutions would be adequate without some reference to the entertainment industry. Arguably, no institution today does as much to shape our ideas of the norm as the movies and TV shows that we watch. Here, the change has been dramatic in its swiftness. Now, Julian might not remember this. Sorry, you're too young. Do the rest of you remember Ellen DeGeneres' sitcom, Ellen, right? Very popular show. In the third season of that show, Ellen came out kissing a woman on air in 1997, and the show was canceled the next year. As Ellen explained, they canceled my show because they didn't want a lesbian in prime time once a week. Yet in the very year that Ellen's show was canceled, a new show, Will and Grace, appeared, a sitcom that prominently featured two out gay men, one living a life more in tune with the artsy stereotype of the time for gay men, while the other was a straight-laced lawyer, every bit the image of the normalized, successful, 30-something New York career person. Except, of course, he was gay. In the second season of that show, in 1999, the two men had an on-air kiss, and the show continued to be very popular until it ended in 2006. Clearly, something was changing culturally. Since that time, the depiction on TV of sexualities other than heterosexuality has exploded. In 2015, two very different sitcoms premiered, Schitt's Creek, which featured a pansexual who ends up married to the man he loves in the series conclusion. I guess I should have said spoiler alert, but come on, who hasn't watched this show, right? Does someone not know Schitt's Creek? Diane, you haven't watched it? Okay, you gotta watch it. It's an amazing show. So Schitt's Creek came out, and then Grace and Frankie. And this isn't a spoiler alert, because this happens in the very first episode. A series about two women who find themselves in their 70s divorced because their husbands have decided to be open about their decades-long romantic attachment to each other and desire to be married. The two men do marry, and in a real step towards normalizing gay marriage, their marriage is not without the normal stresses and strains that all marriages face. Both these shows were highly acclaimed. Schitt's Creek winning an outstanding 65 Emmys, while Grace and Frankie earned 42 Emmy nominations, but only had one Emmy win. I think maybe in another talk we can talk about age discrimination, because this was Grace and Frankie had an amazing cast. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen, and Sam Waterston. And yet he gets one Emmy? And if you haven't seen Grace and Frankie, you have to watch it. It's well written, it's a great show, but all of the actors are in their 70s and 80s. So something might be going on there. So that was all in 2015. Two new shows, very popular with non-heterosexual relationships in it. What else happened in 2015? The Supreme Court legalized gay marriage. Hand in hand with popular culture, the law changed in 2015 with a court case, Obergefell v. Hodges. In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court ruled that state laws prohibiting gay marriage violated the the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law, Justice Kennedy wrote of same-sex couples in the case. The Constitution grants them that right. What has happened since 2015? We have a married gay man, Pete Buttigieg, as Secretary of Transportation. My very conservative Republican district in Kansas, where I was raised, now has a lesbian Native American for a congressional representative. And she was reelected in 2022. And she is the first Democrat to represent my district in probably, 70, 80, 90 years. I mean, it's a hardcore Republican place. And homosexuals have been elected to all levels of government. The gay governor of Colorado is married and raising children with his partner. The former mayor of Chicago was a lesbian. And we even have openly lesbian and bisexual United States senators, Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona. In the entertainment world, more and more transgender characters are appearing in shows such as Orange is the New Black, The Umbrella Factory, and my favorite, and Diane, you should watch this. How many of you have seen Heartstoppers? Oh my God, you gotta watch it. It's incredibly sweet. It's kind of, I am the mother of one gay child and one non-binary child. And Heartstoppers is sort of the fairy tale high school experience you would want to have for your LGBTQ plus children. I mean, there's some bullying and things like that, but it's incredibly sweet. Watch it, Diane. That's your assignment. Anyway, So everything's fine, dandy, the war's been won, we can all go home, right? Well, of course not. The whole reason for this talk is because of the still very challenging situation that we're in when we discuss what is considered normal behavior and what is considered deviant. The path to changing societal norms is not smooth, nor does it flow uniformly and consistently in one direction. As I mentioned at the opening of this talk, anti-LGBTQ plus legislation is exploding. Discrimination at places of business against LGBTQ plus people has been approved by the Supreme Court. And now there is talk about reviewing the legal decision that allowed for gay marriage. These are indeed perilous times. Martin Luther King wrote that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. He didn't mean that there is some invisible hand out there somehow ensuring that justice will inevitably be done on earth. He was instead looking over the history of the world and acknowledging the obvious, that as a result of human action, there has been a change for the better. At least in some places, excuse me. If people of goodwill and faith work to make the world a better place, it will happen. It's not an easy fight. Martin Luther King Jr., Matthew Shepard, many, many, many others, too numerous to name, have been murdered in this fight for human rights. But this fight has moved the needle on what is considered normal. Behaviors that in earlier times were considered criminal and punishable by death, like a woman wearing men's clothing, are now so very normal as not to garner any attention at all. We know that change can happen in the future because we know that change has happened in the past. In 1977, the first year that Gallup did a poll on homosexuality, only 43% of Americans thought that gay or lesbian relations between consenting adults should be legal. In 2019, that figure was 83%. Now, it's a shame that it's not 100%, but that's almost a doubling of the percentage of people who see homosexual relations as normal. In 1997, only 14% of Americans thought that gays and lesbians should be allowed to adopt children. In 1977. In 2019, that figure was 75%. This is a clear example of how what is considered normal has changed in just the last 50 years. Behaviors once considered deviant because they were outside of what was considered the norm, like homosexuals adopting children, is now mainstream, part of the norm. These are positive changes which we need to build upon. It's up to each and every one of us to continue the work of broadening the boundaries of what is considered normal, to shrink the realm of behaviors considered deviant, and to create the society that we want to live in. It's on all of us now to do our part. And that's my talk, if you want to talk about it. Yes? Excuse me.
Just a brief comment. I just moved from Virginia, and it was only mid-pandemic, I think, that they struck the law prohibiting sex outside of marriage. So
that
I think
was
most
still
people
on the books?
Didn't know it was on the books until they took it off. So just a little comment there.
And again, so that shows also the pervasiveness of those 12th century norms, right? You don't have sex outside of marriage.
We had Sheila Kennedy, who used to be the head of the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, and then was a professor of public policy and law at IUPUI. And she talked to us, I think, about 2 years ago about, I asked her to talk about freedom, and she talked about the conflict between freedom and community, because community tells you who to do. Well, it tells you who to be and how to behave, right? And so if you don't, if you violate their norms, then you're out. So people stay out of community sometimes just to feel like they're free. And we talked about this. We had a chalice circle going, and another group, I think it may have been the Credo group, talked about this service. And we all felt like we did not feel that tension in this church. And I think it's because in very few ways does this church tell you what to believe. But telling you what to believe is making some things deviant, right? So if you just accept people instead of trying to limit who belongs, then that whole issue of the conflict between community and freedom kind of goes away.
That is a huge step, right, to be taken.
It really is.
I was thinking of my mother-in-law, who's long deceased. That picture back there is hers. And after she died, Dan, my husband, and I gave it to the church, and I look at that, and it kind of makes me laugh, because I know my mother-in-law, who is a very conservative Catholic, I know she considered this church deviant. And if she knew about her only grandchildren, she would consider them deviants too. And I often wonder, would her love for them, because I knew she loved them a lot, would that overcome her disgust at what she thinks are horrendous behaviors, you know? So it's such a work in progress.
Right. One of the things that gave me hope in the early 2000s, we moved out here to Hendricks County, was taking my two-year-old, that would have been 2002 probably, 2003, taking him to the play area at McDonald's in Avon, and several times seeing older women who were white with two-year-olds who were obviously mixed race, young kids who were obviously mixed race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they looked a little uncomfortable, but they were there with the kids and they were loving toward their kids. And, you know, I don't know how people don't love their kids for racial or trans or whatever reasons. But I found that encouraging, because that was converting some people from their racism over to see maybe it wasn't so bad. More questions, comments, complaints?
Comment.
Okay. Go ahead.
I know you objected to something I said at the beginning.
Okay. I remember the fuss over electing Kennedy as a Catholic president. And I didn't realize Biden was Catholic until well after he was elected.
Well, think about Mitt Romney as a Mormon. That came up a lot. I think the evangelicals actually were against him because he was a Mormon. Although, I don't know, who knows how they think, but yeah.
You mentioned your mother-in-law and whether she would accept her grandchildren, and it made me think about my deceased brother-in-law, who was a male chauvinist pig, but also a very loving father, and his daughter came out as lesbian after he was deceased, mm-hmm. and his wife, the mother of my niece, said she wonders whether Nick would have accepted, you know, his daughter if he had known. And she has decided, and the rest of the family has have decided that she he definitely would have come around, and that the love would have, you know, overcome his can't think of the way I want to phrase it, the standards that he had been inculcated with. And he would have, you know, accepted his daughter because he loved her.
Well, my parents are still alive. They're 92 and 90. And John, my son, is not out to anyone in the family. Carmen, for those of you who remember them, they're just always so out there. So they changed their name at college. So I had to tell my parents they're non-binary, because when they were announced receiving their diploma, they weren't called Carolyn, they were called Carmen. But anyway, so I had a long talk with John. It's like, because I know my parents, and my parents are kind of intolerant towards the LGBTQ plus community. But I told John, I said, you know, they would love you. They would still love you. And he says, I know they would, but I don't want to be the exception. I don't want them, you know, having all their hate towards the LGBTQ plus community and then loving me. So he'd rather keep his relationship that they think, you know, he's actually, he lives in Germany now, and they kind of think that he's there for a woman. I let them believe that, because he's actually there for a man. And he has been in a long-term relationship with this person since his sophomore year in college. And they're very happy together. But, yeah. It's going to take a long time. You know, even in those Gallup poll numbers, it's like, well, why do only 83% of people approve of homosexual relationships? Like, you 17%, who are you to even have an opinion on this? It's not your business. Just get away.
I think the 17% are the MAGA people.
I'm sure they are, but it's just like, I just can't get over it. I mean, frankly, as a mother, I don't want to think about my kids' sex lives. I don't think any parent wants to think about their kids' sex lives, right? Let's just get out of their sex lives. Just, I'm sorry. I am conservative that way. I don't want to know what any of you people are doing. Don't tell me. It's because, you know, I just feel like it's everywhere. Just let people be. And let's talk about, like, Schitt's Creek and Heartstopper instead.
The conversation about parental acceptance made me wanted to mention this, that my role at PFLAG, my role at Hingis County Pride now is special projects. And our first special project was starting a PFLAG chapter here in Hingis County. So if you know people with LGBT kids or LGBT family members, please tell them about PFLAG. We'll be having an open house in August, and then we're going to have our first chapter meeting where people come to share what's going on in their lives in September. So if you know people in that category, please let them know about us. I think we're probably at a good stopping time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely.